On the program today, this economy, of course, the global economy, of course, the media economy as well, from American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today. This one is the 17th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Hey, so you know that game we play sometimes? What is Jay Powell thinking? In five words or less, if you're really good, you can do it. Well, we don't need to guess this week. Powell had that press conference yesterday to announce the interest rate increase, a quarter percentage point, in case you missed it. Mostly, though, Powell was trying to make the case that the economy is actually pretty strong, and that, in point of fact...
In my view, the probability of a recession within the next year is not particularly elevated.
Well, that's one person's opinion, right? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman decided to collect some others.
Are we likely heading for a recession in the U.S.? On the hawkish side are economists who've been warning for a while that inflation was getting way out of hand.
The Fed has been consistently overly optimistic about inflation coming down, and it's really behind the curve.
University of Maryland emeritus economist Peter Morici says because the Fed waited so long and let inflation get so high and pervasive, it's going to have to do more than raise interest rates a quarter point every month or two to slow the economy down.
We've never really had this kind of inflation without causing a recession to bring it under control.
And there is a fair amount of skepticism out there that the Fed can navigate the tumultuous global economy and geopolitical situation. Here's Joe Bruzuelas at consulting firm RSM.
Basically, we're asking the impossible out of the United States Federal Reserve.
By expecting the Fed to slow the economy just enough to cool inflation, but not stall growth. He says that's nigh on impossible with Russia's war on Ukraine and soaring oil prices, plus
pervasive uncertainty, a pandemic that's not yet finished, another supply shock, all while we're having essentially 8% inflation that's likely to crest above 10%.
He puts the chance of a recession over the next year at 1 in 3, higher if the war in Ukraine spreads. There are more optimistic views. Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research says recessions are typically caused by the Fed acting too aggressively or an asset bubble bursting, neither of which he thinks is in the cards right now.
We're going into this with a very strong economy, 3.8% unemployment. We will have some choppy waters, the supply chain because of the COVID, but none of that translates into a recession.
Pick your scenario, lose some sleep or sleep well until the next GDP numbers come along. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Oh, man, Mitchell. Holy cow. Wall Street today? Well, I guess you could call it a post-Fed rally, right? We'll have the details, Mitchell, when we do the numbers. You don't have to be in the market for a new car or necessarily be a regular listener to this program, although that would be nice, to know that cars, both new and used, have become more scarce and more expensive the past couple of years. So the automotive news of the day is that that is going to get worse. S&P Global Mobility has some new analysis out, saying there are going to be 2.5 million fewer cars to be had this year and next because of the war and sanctions and, oh yeah, COVID lockdowns in China and that earthquake yesterday in Japan, which is affecting a major chip supplier over there. That is a whole lot of new kinks in an already pretty kinked up global supply chain. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
It's been one thing after another for the auto industry. First came the initial wave of COVID lockdowns and factory closures, then the semiconductor chip shortages.
Now we've got war and earthquakes and a new variant of COVID.
Michelle Krebs at Cox Automotive says so far, the war in Ukraine is primarily affecting European carmakers, which get a lot of their wiring from Ukraine. But she says American carmakers will likely be affected too, because they get critical materials from both Ukraine and Russia.
Palladium, which is used in catalytic converters, that comes from Russia. Ukraine produces a lot of the neon gas that's used for chip making.
COVID outbreaks and restrictions in China are also slowing production for some automakers, including Volkswagen and Toyota. Sam Fiorani at Auto Forecast Solutions says he doesn't expect that to last.
The Chinese market is very resilient.
The war in Ukraine and the ongoing chip shortage will likely reverberate for longer, he says. But all of these disruptions highlight a bigger problem.
The auto industry over the last 40 years has shifted towards a just-in-time plan where parts come in and they get assembled onto the vehicle. There's very little warehousing of components.
So any delay is felt almost immediately. Bernard Zwicky at the Center for Automotive Research says all the supply chain issues of the last 2 years would be bad enough on their own.
But they're also happening at a time when the industry is transforming the product that we build.
Moving away from gas-powered cars and toward electric ones.
It means a very different supply chain and a lot more vulnerability to some of the shortages in raw materials and rare earth elements.
And Zwicky says world events are making that transition a lot more difficult. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
I gave you the tally on this one the other day. Russia is under something like 5,500 individual sanctions, making it the most sanctioned country in the world. More than Cuba, which has been under U.S. sanctions since the middle of the last century, and more than Iran, which used to hold the title. The United States and its allies have done almost their best to cut Russia out of the global economy. Energy, of course, the big exception. They've been seizing assets and freezing accounts. The thing about sanctions, though, is that the pain trickles down the economic ladder, which makes everyday life for Russians right now what? Well, Iranians could tell you. So Marketplace's Lily Jamali, Iranian-American herself, talked to some of them to find out.
If there's one stereotype that my fellow Iranians might never shake, it's this one.
Iranians love stuff. We love iPhones. We love Gucci. We love all of these things.
But Iranian-American Mana Mostatabi says for her family back in Iran, iPhones and Gucci are far from the top of the list right now. That's because when sanctions hit, inflation follows.
I have heard so many stories of bread prices changing day to day. Folks who are skipping meals because prices have gone up so much.
In 2013, the Obama administration stiffened the sanctions against Iran. That same year, Donna Fairvard's uncle there was diagnosed with colon cancer. And because of U.S. sanctions,
my uncle wasn't able to access his chemotherapy in a hospital. My cousins had to go to the black market to purchase his medicine.
Which accomplished the opposite of what sanctions intended, says Fairvard, who's with the National Iranian American Council. She says the black market in Iran is largely run by the nation's Revolutionary Guard.
The very entity that the United States is saying they're trying to punish through sanctions.
U.S. policymakers are well aware of the drawbacks of sanctions. Richard Nephew was the lead sanctions expert for the U.S. team negotiating with Iran during the Obama administration.
As with any other kind of activity, in economic spaces, you create distortions if you change markets and affect things. And certainly that can benefit, people in the illicit spaces.
Nephew says sanctions are acts of violence. They're not victimless. But he adds they're an alternative to actually going to war. And they can be implemented with carve-outs aimed at doing less harm.
For instance, in the United States, there are a number of general licenses and exemptions of sanctions that exist to attempt to enable humanitarian trade and other such things to continue, notwithstanding the impact of sanctions.
But critics of sanctions say global corporations don't often deliver on humanitarian needs because they're worried about being perceived as running afoul of the law. There's one more price sanctions extract from Iranians in Iran and abroad, says Persis Karim, director of the Center for Iranian Diaspora Studies at San Francisco State.
I think the effect that sanctions create is also a view of a country and its people that is conflated with the policies of a government.
Karim says she abhors what Russia is doing in Ukraine, but
I'm just wondering if the sanctions are going to reproduce another form of misery and horror elsewhere.
Xenophobia, she says, is one impact of sanctions that's impossible to measure. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Coming up.
This is something that's not going to happen overnight.
Look, things take time. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 417 points today, 1 2/10%, 34,480. The NASDAQ lifted 178 points, 1 3/10%, 13,614. The S&P 500 up 53 points, about 1.2%, 44,011. Amazon says it has finalized its purchase of the MGM movie and television studio, the one, of course, with the Roaring Lion. $8.5 billion is the price tag. Plan was announced last spring, challenged by some antitrust regulators and labor groups, but that challenge lapsed. As part of the deal, Amazon now owns part of the James Bond franchise. Among its more than 4,000 movies and 17,000 TV episodes in the library, Amazon today up 2.7%. MGM Resorts, another part of that business, down about 0.5%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Sabri did a story for us the other day, Tuesday, I think, about Russia maybe defaulting on some of its dollar-denominated bonds. Maybe because they get the standard 30-day grace period that everybody else in the sovereign debt market gets. But the fact is that even though the prospects of Russia actually honoring those payments that are due seems to be pretty slim, there is still a market for those bonds. Granted, they are going for pennies on the dollar, but my point is that if you're of a mind to, there is still money to be made on the Russia trade. Take China, for instance. Beijing says it is still going to do business with Moscow and has called the West's sanctions illegal and unilateral. But as Marketplace's Jennifer Pack reports now from Shanghai, that does not mean that getting Russian deals done is without risk.
In central China, manufacturer Zhang Lujun makes Christmas decorations and cell phone screen protectors. In normal times, a third of his products would have been exported to Russia, but not anymore.
Right now, we don't produce orders placed by Russian clients because we're worried that the Russians won't take the products once they're produced.
China's government says it will trade with Russia as normal. But in practice, it's not easy, with so many Russian banks sanctioned. Lawyer Bernard Chenju is a partner at Morrison & Forster in Hong Kong. He advises Chinese firms on U.S. economic sanctions and says there are legal risks.
If a Russian company and a Chinese company is doing business in U.S. dollars and the payments flow through a U.S. bank, that's an issue that falls under primary sanctions because it's directly touching on U.S. jurisdiction.
There is a way to work outside of U.S. jurisdiction. He says Russia holds a lot of Chinese currency, so transactions can be settled in Chinese yuan using Chinese banks and China's own cross-border payment system. But, he says, Chinese firms can still be subject to so-called secondary sanctions.
America can say, yes, these dealings are outside of my control, but since you are dealing with a target of my sanctions, I'm going to impose sanctions on you as well.
The penalties can be steep. U.S. prosecutors said Chinese tech giant Huawei did business in Iran in violation of American sanctions and charged the firm's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, with fraud. She was arrested in Canada in 2018 to be extradited to the U.S. China then detained a couple of Canadians, creating a diplomatic standoff that took 2 years to resolve.
A lot of Chinese companies ought to be really careful, you know, given what happened to Huawei.
That's Xu Qingduo, a senior researcher with the Beijing-based think tank Pangol Institution. He says Chinese businesses can still safely trade with Russia for things like wheat, even oil and gas, because the European Union is still buying from Russia. But getting oil into China could be a challenge, says international trade lawyer Yang Jie with the Huiye law firm in Shanghai.
Many Western firms, including some big shipping companies, are voluntarily sanctioning Russia on their own, which is not required by their governments.
Some analysts say the war in Ukraine puts China in an awkward position. America and Europe are its biggest trading partners, but also
China, Russia, and Ukraine trade a lot with each other. The trade relationship between China and Ukraine was very good.
But China is sympathetic to Russia's grievances about NATO expansion, because to a certain degree, the Chinese feel they're under pressure too from the U.S., building alliances around it in Asia. Again, researchers Xu Qingduo.
That does not mean China supports Russia specifically on the Ukraine issue here. Everybody suffers, including China.
Sure, he says, China could play a bigger role to stop the war in Ukraine. But there is a concern among some, he says. Let's say the Chinese government works closely with the U.S. and it all works out.
But the U.S. probably will continue to have a problem with China, you know, over Hong Kong, over Xinjiang, over Taiwan, human rights, you know, Tibet. So the U.S. is not likely to change its stance on China. So then what's the point?
And like the U.S.-China tensions, it's companies that are caught in the middle. Again, trade lawyer Yang Jie.
The situation Chinese companies are facing is this. There is more demand from Russia, and Chinese companies could expand their businesses.
But if they do that, he says, Chinese firms risk being cut off from Western markets. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
The pandemic has been good business for some, as we've talked about. Among them, streaming. The Motion Picture Association says subscriptions globally were up 14% last year compared to 2020. But you know what comes along with all those new subs? Password sharing, that's what. And you know who you are. Enough said about that. But that sharing is money not in the bank for the streamers. So Netflix is trying, again, to do something about it. Starting in Chile, Costa Rica, and Peru, the company is going to test a new system that charges accounts with extra users outside their households about three extra U.S. dollars a month. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has that one.
Eleanor Patterson has so many streaming subscriptions, seven off the top of her head.
I give out my password to a few people, my mother. I give my password to my mother.
Patterson studies TV and media trends at Auburn University. She says in its early days, Netflix basically endorsed password sharing.
just to be able to show expansion, even if some people are, you know, bootlegging or getting it unofficially.
Now, she says it's switched gears from growing its cultural footprint to growing its revenue. But it's not as simple as cutting those bootleggers off.
It's like putting toothpaste back into a tube.
Consumers are sensitive to having things taken away from them, according to David Offenberg, a professor of entertainment finance at Loyola Marymount University. He says that's why Netflix, for now, is just testing a fee system for extra account users.
I think they're trying to avoid alienating customers. I think they're trying to avoid bad press. I think they're trying to avoid getting a target on their back.
Because Netflix is swimming in a sea of competitors. Mukul Krishna is a digital ecosystems analyst at Frost & Sullivan.
Anything that is going to go against that ethos of being user-friendly might backfire.
He says the whole industry will be watching this particular Netflix pilot.
If it spectacularly fails,
like if customers cancel their subscriptions in droves,
then competitors would want to actually project, hey, we actually let you do that.
So if you've been using your ex-boyfriend's mom's HBO account to watch Succession, your time's not up quite yet. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
The second ever Black-owned media upfronts wrapped up yesterday. As the name suggests, media companies managed by Black Americans pitching their content to advertisers, an event that is necessary because Black-owned media and thus Black audiences have historically been overlooked by Madison Avenue. LaToya Shambo is the founder of the marketing agency Black Girl Digital. They broker partnerships between brands and influencers on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here, Kai.
What are you trying to do with this company? What's your mission statement, I guess?
Well, here at Black Girl Digital, we are on a mission to lessen the wage gap between Black and Brown and white influencers. So there is a huge pay gap between Black influencers and white influencers. So we are here to close that wage gap.
How's it going? Are you having much luck?
That's a very good question. We have had some luck. We've been able to work with brands such as Walmart, Varo Bay, the city of Boston, really bringing more Black creators into the fold and getting them paid well to just do the things that they love to do.
So one of the things that, well, certainly we hear, but a lot of people talked about after George Floyd was that this was a moment in this economy where Black creators, yes, but also just Black Americans in this economy were going to be empowered. And one of the things that you saw happening was the big company said, we are going to spend more money going after these audiences to empower them, to get them, and to help them. And I guess my question to you is, are they?
You know, I'm going to have to say, from my end, I'm definitely seeing a lot of brands step up. Huh. You know, this is something that's not going to happen overnight. And you can't expect, especially a lot of these corporations, these major corporations, it'll be really challenging for them to try and connect with these communities if they don't have the right internal voices sharing and connecting and saying, hey, you know, these are the key players, or right, this is the messaging. This sounds good. That's not going to work. It's a balancing act of internal changes as well as external changes.
Yeah. And after generations and honestly, centuries of ignoring that market, they need some help. And that's kind of where you come in.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. You know, and we're not beating them over the head like, we can't believe you're not doing this. Yeah. It's more of like, hey, we see that, you know, you need some support here. Let us help with getting the right talent behind the lens for you so that it's a fair and equitable marketplace.
Let me ask you a nuts and bolts question. How do you find the influencers that you want to help out? Do you just spend hours and hours and hours, more hours than the rest of us, I guess, just scrolling TikTok and Instagram?
That's a good question. And, you know, it's a mix. So out the gate, you know, I have relationships and a huge list of at least right now, I think we're at maybe over 1,000 Black creators. Huh. My team, they're always kind of in the loop of who's next and who's now.
Yeah, and it's always changing, right? Just because all that stuff changes so fast. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's what's an interesting conversation right now is influencer burnout, right? So we're also, you know, having to be very mindful and checking in with the creators just to, you know, hey, are you still in the game? How's business? Because burnout's real. People, they take vacations.
Well, I mean, the thing about digital, right, is you got to feed the beast all the time, man. If I go all to my Insta and it's not there, I'm like, where you been? You know?
All the time. Yeah. Yeah.
So in 5 years, where is your slice of the influencer industry? That is to say, people of color and getting them a fair shot. Where are you, do you think?
That's a good question. Right now, it's the wild, wild west. Hmm. And that's the challenge. Maybe one creator over here gets paid $20,000 and another creator, similar following, might get paid, you know, $2,000. I think that in 5 years, we're going to have to figure out some kind of regulation and pay scale. We have an internal pay scale. Right. We're killing two birds with one stone. We're putting more people of color in ad campaigns, as well as allowing for brands to reach more people of color all at the same time.
LaToya Shambo, she's the founder, also the CEO of Black Girl Digital. Ms. Shambo, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much again for having me. I really appreciate it.
This final note on the way out today, we've quoted him in a story or two the last couple of weeks, but the list of companies not leaving Russia that Yale School of Management professor Jeff Sonnenfeld is keeping is starting to go viral. The Washington Post picked it up today, mostly, it seems, because Koch Industries has decided to stay in Russia. Also, Reebok, Cargill, LG Electronics as well. Off we go, not, however, without your moment of economic context. Saw this on Axios today, which I will augment with this disclaimer. Please consult your own financial advisor. Cryptocurrency app downloads in the fourth quarter of last year, remember that's just 3 months, topped 100 million. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.